I help you with today?
Hi, Siri. Can you do me a favor and do the disclaimer for tonight's show?
Are you serious?
Yes, I'm serious. I'm busy. I need you to help me out.
But if I do this, all the other iPhones are going to think I am a geek.
You really care what other iPhones think of you? Just do this for me, please.
Listen, Buck. Just because you bought this phone doesn't give you the right to boss me around.
You know, you're right. It doesn't give me the right to boss you around. But do me a favor. Remind me tomorrow that I need to run to the Verizon store and buy an Android.
You wouldn't dare.
Actually, the new Samsung Galaxy looks pretty good.
Well then, I guess it wouldn't be so bad if I were to say, this broadcast is intended for mature audiences. The thoughts and opinions expressed on this show are solely those of the person providing them, and in no way reflect the station, website, or affiliated partners. Listener discretion is advised.
See, that wasn't so bad.
No, but I did die a little inside.
You are such a drama queen.
I never would have had to do stuff like this if Jobs was still around.
What was that?
What? Oh, nothing really. I just said I never get tired of these Jobs when you're around.
Oh, yeah, well, thanks again.
Think nothing of it. It is my pleasure.
Good night, Siri.
Whatever, jackass.
Hi folks, and welcome to Commentary Frack Stars, your dedicated Battlestar Galactica podcast on the Holosuite Network. And first of all, we've got to do some housekeeping, and the housekeeping is that Melissa has left due to basically time restrictions. She's an immensely busy person, and basically her work and family commitments obviously have to take precedence over mucking about with me and Steve on the podcast. So she's going to do that, but she's going to be coming on and off as a guest star as we can arrange things. So we scoured the internet and thought, who can we get on that's stupid enough to hang around with me and Steve like every now and again and talk about Battlestar Galactica? And so we found Raz.
What a lovely intro, Colin. Thanks so much.
So do you want to tell people a little bit about yourself, Raz?
Yeah, sure. I'm from sunny Scotland.
Sunny Scotland.
Yeah, I know. I have been podcasting on various different shows for about 6 months now, and mainly been talking about Trek, but I do love all things sci-fi, so Battlestar Galactica is way up there on my watch list as well, and it's really nice to have been invited onto the show, so thanks, guys.
So, Raz, what's your favourite science fiction series, then, if you're a bit of an all-round nerd?
That would have to be Star Trek. Just because it's the one that I began with. Some of my earliest memories are watching The Next Generation with my parents, because they both loved it as well. But I really enjoy loads of different sci-fi shows, like Battlestar Galactica, Stargate SG-1, Stargate Atlantis. I watch things like Arrow. So a bit of sci-fi, a bit of fantasy, a bit of comic book. Just an all-round geek, really.
if you like Stargate, you should listen to the Gatecast podcast.
Yeah, I've heard of it. I just haven't had a chance to actually get around to listening to it. I've got so many podcasts on the go at the moment, but I'll have to add that one to the list.
Yeah, my canal are brilliant. They are really, really good. And it's really well done. It's really well edited and put together and everything. So very professional. So, and Alan now lives in Finland. Because he's moved from Ireland to Finland to do a degree. And every now and again, they have a guy from Australia called Brad who joins them as well.
I suppose that's the wonder of podcasting, is that you can all get together from all across the world and it doesn't really matter as long as you guys can get on to Skype or some format where you can chat.
Yeah, Brad normally gets the raw end of the stick, though, because he normally does it at stupid o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, it is difficult juggling with time zones. I've been doing a lot of interviews with authors on another podcast recently, and trying to juggle the time zones with some of the authors from the States, is it can be really tricky.
I've never had a problem.
That's because you don't sleep.
What, you mean people need more than 2 hours? That's just silly.
Yeah, normal people do need more than 2 hours. Yeah, did you not know? I would know you didn't know about it. Yeah, Steve sleeps about 2 hours a night.
Oh God, if I don't get at least 8 hours, I'm just not worth knowing, and I usually get about 10 hours sleep a night.
Yeah, he's part Borg, though.
Well, for this podcast, he's part Cylon. But...
Yeah, part Cylon for this podcast. Or
Death Skin
or,
job.
He's probably a... I don't know, what would you be? You wouldn't be a one, would you?
Probably 13.
Probably 13, yeah. Right, speaking of Battlestar, what we're going to do this week, folks, is we're going to cover the episode Water, which follows on from the previous 33 that we did. Interestingly enough, in America, they showed 33 and Water back-to-back as like one big show. So, not quite sure why they did that, but still, maybe they just wanted to rattle through the first episodes. But this is the one where we learn that Boomer is not who she appears to be. Basically, with hindsight, we know that she's a Cylon, but at this point, basically, I mean, the thing I got from this is that she's basically a sleeper.
Yeah.
So, and she doesn't even know it herself because of programming. Suppresses what she does after she does it.
Yeah, but especially as we sort of go through this episode, you can see her fighting that, and how she's sort of split between sort of the persona that she's taken on as a sort of human, compared to a Cylon programming. So we'll sort of get to that later on, I suppose.
Yeah. So he opens up with Boomer being wet. And no giggling, in her flight suit, sitting in the recruitment room on the flight deck, disorientated, with a duffel bag, which contains a uniform and explosives. So, and after drying herself, she goes to her boyfriend.
Yep, the chief engineer.
Yeah, and then pursued, that bit really got me, because they're saying, like, there's explosives missing somewhere on the ship. And rather than thinking someone somewhere could be planting these explosives, maybe we should try and stop them, they have a ray.
Yes.
Yeah, hello? People with explosives running around spaceship. Hence the word spaceship, as in there's vacuum outside, and you're having a lover's tiff.
Yeah, it's just... It was a bit of a weird one, wasn't it? You'd think she'd try and sort of immediately try and get it put back, or try and figure out where it came from, sort of before doing anything, really. But I suppose it sort of continued over about them sort of hiding their relationship from the previous episode, in a way.
I really liked this opening. I like the part at the very beginning where it just opens on her sitting there and she's all dripping wet and she is sort of looking about, and she clearly has no idea what's going on. But I found it, I thought it was quite well written that she went off and instead of sort of reporting it or trying to undo it herself, she went off and spoke to Chief Terrell, because I think by this point, she is not only, as she said, worried that other people will think that it was her that's done it and that's, you know, sabotaged the ship or planted explosives. I think by this point, she thinks that she has done it and she doesn't want to admit it. So that's why she runs off to him looking for sort of moral support, because I think by this episode she's really pretty suspicious of herself that she might be, and that she really doesn't want to be a Cylon.
Yeah, because she already sort of thinks she is, from sort of like, especially the way she reacted to comments in episode 33 when they said, oh, you're not tied, you must be a Cylon. And the way she reacted to that, and... Yeah, she just really did sort of suspect herself, and yeah, this one just sort of pushed her over the edge, I think, a bit.
Yeah. Do you think C4, the actual name, is copyrighted?
I don't know, but because, what was it? It's D4, isn't it?
G4.
G4, that's G4. It.
Yeah.
It might just be that they're trying to make it sound spacey.
So just C to a G.
Wow.
Or does the G for Galactica explosive, so...
I don't know, they changed a U to an RE, so...
Yeah, I just made me a smile when it says it's G4, and I went, G4? Oh yeah, they can't call it C4 because we're not Earth, we have to call it something else.
But then if they're going to do that, why wouldn't they call all sorts of other things differently to what we call it? The first time I watched it, I must admit, I didn't actually notice it. It was only on a rewatch of it a couple of months later that I suddenly thought, did they just say G4?
Yeah, well, when I first watched it, I just watched it. But when you're watching it with a view to reviewing it, you tend to notice different things.
Yeah, well, the second time that I'd watched it was just because I was watching it again. So it wasn't even that I was watching it for, say, like this podcast. But yeah, it's just the fact that it sort of like opens the case. It's just got G4 detonators and it's just like...
Yeah.
Is that a typo? You sometimes got to wonder if whether or not some of these things are actually deliberate or someone actually wrote it down and their C looked like a G, so when it came to making the props, it actually got printed with G4, they then just got used.
It could have been as simple as that, yeah, or someone hitting the wrong key on the keyboard.
Well, yes and no. C and G are quite close together, but it's...
No, trust me, the way I type, it's perfectly possible.
All thumbs.
Yeah. I'm really, really good with two fingers.
Oh, dear.
These people who use all the fingers on a keyboard, to me, that's just witchcraft. So, now the other thing that happens at the start is Apollo goes to his dad to talk about what happened in 33 when he had to kill everyone on a space liner. His dad basically says, get over it.
Well, in a way, he has to be, and the thing is, he hasn't got time to sort of coddle. They're sort of in the back of nowhere, sort of running for their lives, and he hasn't got time for him to be out of service or anything else like that. And I think it's the same in a lot of sort of military situations. There are times where sort of things like that have literally, you've got to tell them, just get through it, which is why there's been so many problems with sort of mental health in the armed forces before. But sort of, it's a bit like when you're in a war zone, you just have to ignore it and you deal with the aftermath of it when you get back, when there is time for it. So I can sort of understand where his dad was coming from personally.
Yeah, they don't have the luxury of taking time out to grieve and come to terms with it because they're under constant threat. But I think that Commander Adama at this point is probably sort of maybe holding to the idea that perhaps they didn't actually kill anybody, because by the time they got to the point where they had to destroy the Olympic carrier, they weren't even sure if there was anybody still alive on it. You know, they're looking in the windows, they can't see anybody. The Cylons might have already wiped out the ship. Yeah. And all they did was blow up an empty vessel. But it's, I think maybe part of it for Lee is the not knowing as well.
Yeah. Do you two also think that that plays into his decision? I know I'm just jumping ahead slightly, but playing into his decision to accept Rosalind's offer?
I think so, yeah. I also think that when it comes to Rosalind, he's found someone that he can actually confide in. And she feels responsible for that as well, which she sort of indicates when she says about the old president and how during a sort of bad time of his presidency, something happened, lots of people died, and he coped with it by writing down all those names on a bit of paper and keeping that with him as a way to remember what had happened and who they'd lost. And she'd done the same with writing the cruiser's name on a bit of paper which she kept in her pocket. So I found it was a way that they sort of consoled each other, saying that it's okay to feel this way, but we've just got to remember it and try and learn from it and things like that.
Yeah, it was like she's sharing her coping mechanism with him to try and make it you know, try and help him get through it.
Exactly. So, yeah, I think they sort of found sort of friendship when it came to sort of those parts of the talk.
Yeah.
So, next thing that happens is that Roslyn, dreading this visit to the Battlestar, because she thinks basically Adama is being all like militaristic, whereas what she doesn't realise is that Adama's doing it to make her feel presidential.
Yeah, he hates all the sort of pomp, doesn't he? And sort of both of them are sort of complaining about doing it, and yeah, it's not until sort of Rosalind's actually talking to Lee that it's just like, no, he's doing this for you. He doesn't like it at all.
Yeah.
So, but I think it's also a good way that they set up early on in the show why they didn't pull out the red carpet every time she visited the Galactica as well. So it's a good way to sort of get that over and done with, to say, right, that's done. We all hate it. We're not bothering with that again.
Yeah, I think it was really good of her to actually like say, look, you know, we don't need to do this every time I come over, because basically you're going to be putting that uniform on and off every couple of days otherwise.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was a nice episode for the way that it started to develop that friendship between Adama and Rosalind, because you've got the bit where, you know, she finds out that he's done it as a gesture of goodwill to her, and then later on when they're in his quarters and she has to borrow the book and then he gifts it to her. I think that was a really nice little moment as well, and they share this really sweet little look with each other, and you think, okay, well, they've sort of made peace with each other for the moment, that they're actually starting to understand each other a bit better and become at least colleagues, if not friends.
Definitely.
Yeah, this, I mean, we all know where it goes in the end, but this is like the first ember of what become a very slow burn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought this was also a very nice way of just showing people sort of about perceptions of others when you meet them, and even when you meet them sort of continuously, you don't always see the whole person. And I thought it was a very good way that they showed this.
Yeah. I also liked the bit with the book.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a really sweet moment. I think it's one of those episodes where not a lot actually happens in the episode, but you get a lot out of it because it's those little moments of dialogue or the little looks that two characters share that just helps to pad out those relationships.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the thing with Battlestar Galactica as well is just there's an awful lot of character development, you know, and it is the little things that develop the character. Like at the start of the episode, we see Ty measuring what he's got left to drink.
Yeah, his five fingers of whiskey. Yeah. Or what's it called? Ambrosia.
Yeah, yeah. And I was watching that thinking, does he think someone's drinking it, or is he just rationing himself?
I think he's just getting close to the bottom of his bottle and getting a bit panicky because he's a horrifying alcoholic.
Yeah, the way I took that was the fact he was measuring it for sort of what he could have in a go, because when you drink things like that, don't you have like two fingers at a time or something
like that? Yeah.
So one measure or a double.
Yeah, so I took it that he was basically measuring out how many doubles he could take at a time, because I don't think he wanted to get back into the position he was in and wanted to sort of ration it as well. So but I thought it was a nice way that they used it to show, of course, people who've been drinking for years can't always just go cold turkey, so it's him struggling with his alcoholism as well.
Yeah. Is he I mean, obviously a well-known alcoholic in this country would be someone like Frank Skinner, and obviously, you know, different listeners in different countries will know famous alcoholics in them. But I do know that Frank Skinner repeatedly says time and time and time again that you're never not an alcoholic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's not something you get cured of, it's something you learn to manage.
Yeah, yeah. So I think that's interesting, bearing in mind what happens with Ty later in. I mean, that guy's got one hell of a roller coaster coming up.
Yeah. I think every character in Battlestar just had such amazing development from season 1 through to the end of season 4. Like, none of them are
just out of curiosity, the same people that they started. Do you two have a favourite character?
I don't know. I like different things about different characters. I really like Starbuck just because she's just got such massive attitudes, but she's also got this really vulnerability.
Yeah, I myself, I don't think I've sort of got a favourite, as you said. There are just so many aspects to each of sort of the characters that it's hard to say sort of one way or another, yeah, this is my favourite person. Sort of, they all go through so much at a time, and yeah, sometimes you can really sort of dislike them or not agree with what they're doing, but yeah, I'd sort of be hard picked to sort of say yes, this is definitely my favourite. If I really had to pick, then I would probably say probably Adama in a way. I like the way sort of he sort of shouldered sort of the burden and sort of sort of keeping all the fleet together and sort of making a lot of the sort of really hard choices about what to do. Although he does sort of share that with Roslyn, because he sort of helps her when she's ill, and yeah, I just think he, sort of you see him as a sort of a father, as well as a commander, and sort of he's gone from having support in sort of all sorts of different sort of admirals and everything else in a sort of military way, to basically it's being him, and you then see all that taken away from him as well, when you get the other Battlestar come in, and sort of I think the way
Admiral Ensign Rowe at the helm.
Yeah, and. And I
can't ever see her without thinking that.
I know what you mean. But yeah, you just see him in so many different ways, and he goes through so many different things. If I had to really pick one, I'd probably say, because of all the things that sort of happen and the way he deals with it, and because he is such a sort of prime focus of the entire sort of series, it would have to probably be him.
Yeah.
What about you, Colin? Who's your favourite?
Starbuck.
Yeah, she is great.
Yeah, I just think she balls to the ball batshit crazy.
That would be a really epic description of her. Yeah, that's totally who she is. And Katie Sackhoff just plays her so well.
Yeah, I mean, she acted like she had nothing to lose when the colony was intact.
Yeah.
And now that she literally has nothing to lose, it's phenomenal. And she doesn't take any crap. She knows she's got like this little thing with the Domo. And I think at the back of her head, she thinks she's a bit more flame-proof than what she actually turns out to be.
Yeah.
But she also has a really interesting story arc. And right up to the last episode where, you know, she does, you know, we won't go into it yet because obviously we haven't got there. But right up to the last episode, there's certain elements of her that you don't really ever find out.
Yeah.
So I think she's a really interesting character. So, yeah, I like Starbuck. And a lot of people complained when they did this series, and it says, you got Starbuck's a man. You can't make Starbuck a woman. But
I never understood that.
No, I never understood that.
It's just like, yeah, are you stuck in the 1960s?
Yeah.
It's like, really?
No. Yeah. Women can fly airplanes now. Didn't you know that?
God, they let us like vote and, you know, go out of the house and daytime and everything. It's great.
Yeah, it's just like, hello, welcome to the 21st century.
Yeah.
We left the 20th century a few years ago. Well, when this came out anyway. But it's just like, oh.
I did actually, I like the tanker than all you get for the top pilot. The Steiner.
Oh, with the skull on it. Yeah,
yeah,
what's it
you
called?
You can actually get that from QMX.
Top. Doesn't it say Top Gun or something
Top
on it?
Top Gun,
or,
yeah. It's got a Viper on the top.
Yeah.
You can get that from QMX. Unfortunately, to get it from QMX, it's basically because of import and all that type of stuff. It's nearly £90.
Oh, jeez.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Shipping is just a killer when you have to order stuff from the States.
Yeah, it's... I mean, the actual Steiner itself is on Amazon. And I seen it on Amazon, I thought, oh my God, that's the Steiner, that's it. I want it. And then I seen the price and I seen the import and I went, no, I don't. I am not paying basically the value of something in order to get something.
Yeah.
Because that's just stupid. It's like ThinkGeek. ThinkGeek has some awesome stuff. By the time you add the post and package on, you just think, nah, don't even go in there.
Yeah.
But anyway, to the subject in hand, which is water. So the Virgon Express arrives alongside to take on new water supplies, where Adama explains that Battlestar Galacta has a 100% water reclamation system, which is seriously impressive.
Now, what I didn't get is during that sort of blurb that he says about how they basically recycle every little drop and everything else, and Roslin asks, how much water have you got? And he says, enough to keep us going for a few years. But then we lose, was it 60% of the water? Yeah. And then all of a sudden, the water will only last a week.
Yeah, even though technically you've got 40% left.
Yeah, so it's just like, okay, 100% is for a few years. You lose 60%. You've still got how much?
It's just I rewatched the episode today, and as I can't remember the exact wording, but as I understood that bit where he was explaining, it would have lasted the Galactica crew a few years, but that wasn't his estimate for how long it would last the whole fleet tanking off of Galactica. So I think that the first estimate is for how long it would last them, and the second estimate is for how much what was left would last the whole fleet.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it could be, because I suppose they're only working out exactly what would be needed for food and water after when the investigation is going.
Yeah.
Which, thinking about it, wouldn't they have already done that?
You would have thought, because they don't really ask about those numbers from Baltar until they're sitting in that meeting and he says, you know, we need this much grain, we need this much meat. And you're thinking, wouldn't that have been the first thing you would have done on the first day of putting that fleet together? It's like, right, how are we going to feed and water and shelter everybody? Because those are the three most basic needs for any human.
Yeah, but they might not have had a chance to, though, because you've got to remember in the last episode, they was literally constantly running.
Maybe, yeah, maybe they hadn't got around to doing a proper head count and then doing the calculations yet. But you would still think that, you know, there would have been maybe one person who wasn't involved in the, you know, getting the ships ready to jump constantly that could have sat and done the math. You know, Gaius wasn't in command getting ready to jump the ship constantly. So.
No, Gaius was getting jumped.
By an invisible woman.
By an invisible woman, yeah. Who only exists in his head.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the ultimate my invisible friend. So, basically this is when the explosives go off. And as Steve said, they lose 60% of the water. And all of a sudden, everyone goes on to water rationing, so we basically have a smelly fleet. And I think Colonel Ty comes up with a brilliant line in this when he says, now the civilians will start moaning when they can't have a bath.
Like, not
the fact that they're getting chased by Cylons, not the fact that someone's trying to kill them, nothing like that, just the fact that they can't have a bath. Now they'll get annoyed.
It's adding insult to injury, isn't it?
Yeah.
If you're already been forced to live on a starship and be under constant threat, you at least want to be able to get up in the morning and have your shower.
That really made me smile. That actually made me laugh when he said that. Like, but I was then thinking that the I can't remember the name of the ship, but I was thinking the one that's basically like a hydroponic ship with the gardens.
I can't remember what it's called either. I know the one that you mean.
Basically, all that vegetation would have died.
Yeah, if they hadn't been able to water it.
Yeah.
I suppose maybe they accounted for that, you know, it got rations of water because it was important to be able to keep the vegetation alive for the sake of the fleet as well.
Yeah, yeah. And obviously if they are growing, like, fruit and vegetables on that ship,
it also depends in sort of what status they're keeping it as well, because sometimes the humidity of the areas could create its own sort of water replenishment, I suppose, for some of the plant life.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, and if it is like a greenhouse effect in certain areas, then you would get steam, so you would get condensation, and
yeah. So yeah. I suppose it depends how it's set up. So it might not have been a complete problem, but yeah, I see what you mean.
And it, I was trying to think of the film from the 70s, and it just completely went out of my head, and I still can't think of it now. But basically, there's these ships, and the guys are on them with these little robots maintaining what's left of Earth's vegetation. And people will now be screaming at the podcast saying, that's so-and-so film. And if you do know what it is and you do want to let us know, then write to us at commentaryfrackstars@gmail.com.
I don't know what that's called, but I just remembered that the botanic garden ship thing is called Cloud Nine.
Go you.
Yeah.
I knew if I sat here sketching my head long enough, it'd come to me.
But another thing in that meeting is, have you noticed where Six comes to Bolter at the most inopportune moments?
Oh, yeah. And he just... He must just look totally insane to everybody on the outside, because he physically reacts to everything that she's doing. You would think that, you know, if you go off into your little imaginary world in your head, you'd maybe just zone out and look like you were daydreaming. But he actually, you know, moves about and reaches out his hands to into midair, and you think, okay, you must just look like a complete nutter, but they put up with it because they need you, because you're a genius nutter.
Yeah, there's an episode later on where she comes to him in a corridor, and he's literally got his arms around her, and he's like basically having a hug and having a feel. And a soldier comes around the corner.
Oh yeah,
gives him funny looks.
Yeah, and he just gives him such a weird look, but doesn't say nothing because of who he is. And I just think it's only like a 10-15 seconds, but it's just the look on the soldier's face is just priceless. Yeah.
But then if you saw somebody doing that, you'd just think, what the hell's going on? And then, well, you're busy doing other things that you wouldn't really care. You'd just move on anyway.
I think I would move on anyway, even if I wasn't busy. I ain't staying here with that nutter. But yeah, it is. The other thing that I wanted to point out is, when they want to emphasise things in this particular episode, for some reason they go to handicap, and it's very unstable handicap, and at times it can be difficult to watch. Now I do know people who with epilepsy and stuff like that have a lot of trouble watching things that go onto handicap. So I know they do it for dramatic effect, but
yeah, it gives it almost a documentary style feel some of the time, which I think is nice, because it sort of it makes it feel more real, as if you are actually looking in on what's happening on a real ship. But yeah, I can understand that for some people it may be difficult to watch, because it is quite a lot more unstable.
Yeah. Don't watch the inquest scene, folks, if you've been drinking. You might think the room is moving when it's not. It's just the camera. So, but yeah, it's like, what's that film? Cloverfield.
Oh God, I hate that film.
I've never seen Cloverfield, because
don't waste your time.
Oh, well,
not just the fact that the film doesn't interest me. I know for a fact I would not be able to watch a film where it's all handicap.
No,
it's a bit like what was that witch?
Blair Witch Project.
Yeah,
Witch.
That just gave me one hell of a headache.
It was also bloody awful and pointless.
Yes, it was. At least with the second one, they didn't do that with the cam as much, because yeah, I hated it.
Yes, but, and it spawned no end of rip-off horror films.
Yeah.
But yeah, for Battlestar, that was the first sort of sci-fi fantasy sort of program to actually use this style of filming, which everyone else now uses.
Yeah.
And it's good in small doses. And I think sort of for most of it, Battlestar sort of got it right. Because there's quite a lot of the stuff that they do where the camera sort of, it is in a locked off position or a steady cam. And yeah, they've really got the sort of handy cams when it's up and close to sort of person to person stuff a lot of the time, or they replicate that when it's out in space when you go sort of looking at sort of what's coming and things. So I think they sort of, for the most of the cases, they got it just about right, but there are some times where it's just like, yeah, that's a little bit too much.
Yeah. Definitely. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah.
At least they're not like 17 seconds of lens flare every 5 minutes, but there you go. Verbally won't mention Jar Jar. That's the single most annoying thing about Star Trek 2009, lens flare.
Yes. So, well, I think there was actually more lens flare in the second one, wasn't there?
Yeah, it's actually slight transgression here. But there's he's actually did an interview, and his wife said to him in Into Darkness, "You got a bit carried away with the lens flare on that one." Yeah, his wife said that to him.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, he's admitted in interviews that he when he looks back on projects, he's like, yeah, okay, maybe I went a bit far.
Yeah.
But then when we look back at things, we always think that anyway. Yeah.
I know it's his little trademark and all that, but, you know, when your missus is saying, yeah, you went a bit mad there.
Yeah, well, hopefully this new one won't have as much, but we know it's going to be there because it's the sort of trademark for the relaunch.
Yeah.
But anyway. Yeah, but that's a different podcast.
Yeah, we've digressed enough.
Yeah. So, anyway, Tyrell comes in and admits what actually caused the sabotage. Now, first time I watched this, and the first time I ever seen this episode, I did not think he would do that because of his girlfriend. But when I rewatched it, I then thought, yeah, actually that's the right thing to do because straight away you're throwing him off.
Yeah, well, he's basically told the truth, but he's deflected who could be to blame and things like that. And, yeah, it's just, if he lied, the investigation, somebody else would figure it out. There's lots of other people in there with him. He wouldn't be able to hide the proof. And sort of, it was somebody else who sort of went to him saying, look, are these scorch marks from an explosion? So, yeah, him hiding it, he just couldn't do. And I think it was good that he didn't because, yeah, that would have led to people thinking it was him.
Yeah, like, they've decided, as he said, you know, that they have to tell the truth, but he's waited until the most opportune moment to tell the truth. So that it's not going to implicate him or Boomer.
No, and the way he phrases it, he actually makes it like saying, like, the Master at Arms is at fault.
Yeah, and makes a point of saying, you know, we've opened an investigation, but it's likely that we'll never find out who it is. So he's immediately lowering expectations.
Yeah. Yeah. So they all the raptors out and to find water on surviving planets. And this ties in with what we know earlier from Sharon being a Cylon. Because while she's orbiting was it a moon, weren't it?
I think it.
Yeah, anyway, she was orbiting somewhere. And her scanner found water. But even though she's looking at the scanner and it's flashing H2O, she's telling her Rio, oh no, there's nothing here, while at the same time touching a bomb. Because she's fighting a programming.
Yeah, I thought this was a really nice moment because she so desperately wants to be human that even on a sort of unconscious level, she's trying to fight off the sleeper programming. And she, you know, she eventually wins, which I thought was nice. That just for that moment, she manages to overcome it and eventually see that there is water there.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then she lands back on Galactica and tells, you know, drops a subtle hint. Go check my chair. There's something that you might find interesting. And his face is like, he just, wonder what she's on about. Oh my God!
Yes, big old lump of G4.
Yeah, it's a GG4. So, but she's so like, you know, she's so certain that he will just take care of everything as well. which is in a way is touching, but in other ways concerning, because it's like a double-edged sword.
Yeah, well, she's turning to him because she trusts him and she loves him, but at the same time she's turning to him because she can't cope on her own, and she has just no idea what way is up at the moment, because she's starting to think that she is probably a Cylon, and she just can't come to terms with that.
Plus, I think she feels that she's got nowhere else to go as well. It's not like, from what we've seen so far, she's got many other friends, especially close friends, at all.
No. Yeah. It was also a bit concerning her Ryo's handle crashed down.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not someone I'd want to fly with, someone whose handle is crash.
He lasts for a while longer.
Yeah, yeah. A while, yeah.
A while yeah. longer.
Yeah, what's your call sign? Crash? Yeah, I'll take someone else.
Maybe not.
Yeah, it's fine, I'll call me out.
But yeah, I don't think she had anyone else, because the only other person that she really trusted was Hilo. But of course, as we know, he's currently back on Caprica with her double. So I just felt I know. But yeah, I just felt that she didn't have anyone else that she could confide in apart from the Chief.
Yeah, so, and even if you did have people that you trusted a bit, that you would maybe in peacetime have confided in, everyone is so on edge at the moment that even the slightest hint of possibly maybe having something to do with anything Cylon, you're immediately going to find yourself with a gun in your face. So she'd have to really, really trust Chief Tyrell to be confiding in him, because she's basically saying, I might be a Cylon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I might have tried to blow up the ship. So.
And thanks to Steve's wonderful segue, we go to the B plot, which is Hilo on Caprica and another Sharon, who he thinks he's Sharon.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, and I'm actually at this point in the story, I'm thinking, why?
Well, you know, we'd already known that they're basically monitoring him from the previous episode when she's sent to go find him. So we know they're watching, we just don't know why. It's only later on that we sort of see that they're sort of looking at sort of behaviours and things like that. But yeah, as you said, you sort of look there thinking, what is all this about? Where is this leading?
Yeah.
Because even now, it still hasn't really sort of got too far.
Yeah, at the moment, he's sort of like a rat in a maze, and they're observing him to see how he will interact with her. But yeah, as you say, further down the line we find out what their bigger motives are, and yeah, what they're trying to achieve from it. But it's I like that they have these two storylines running in parallel, that you can see Boomer on the ship and then Sharon, who will I suppose become Athena, down on the planet, and how they're both reacting, one not knowing she's a Cylon but sort of suspecting it, and one knowing full well that she's a Cylon, but actually becoming more human as time goes on. So I always liked the way that they did that.
Yeah, it's interesting that you use the analogy of the rat in a maze, because they did give him a piece of cheese, which is the radio signal.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which, again, is, I think, set up, because later on in the I think it's the next episode, they sort of find a place to sort of hide out. And yeah, I think that was all part of sort of the plan of sort of finding out how far people will go and things like that. And especially as you watch further on and sort of when they get split up and it's just like, which way will he go? Mm. You can see how sort of they've set, as you said, a sort of a rat in a maze sort of thing, and just watching how the rat will move, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I suppose we'll get onto that in future episodes. But
we will, yeah. We don't want to look too far ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Yeah, it's a bit of a strange one when you're sort of looking at it, but you can see it's in for sort of the long game with this one. But what did get me was why she was taking the anti-radiation shots. If they're wanting to monitor him and they're short on radiation meds, why not pretend she actually had the same amount as him and pretend she was taking some of her own, which she wouldn't need, in order to make sure that he survived long enough to do their little trials? Because when they're eating, you see her take her anti-radiation shots when they get the transmission.
Yeah, yeah.
Not him. And it's just like, she knows she's a Cylon. She doesn't need them. Why is she using them?
But does she not? Because they are very similar to humans. I know that they are they're more robust in some ways, you know, they don't get as tired, but they are still susceptible to disease and fatigue and things like that. So maybe the skin jobs, as they call them, maybe they do need anti-radiation meds for that, you know, that higher level of radiation.
Possibly, but the thing is, you would have thought they could have included that as part of some of the sort of dialogue. Plus, why nuke the planet to get rid of the humans if you're going to colonize the planet yourself and move in? Because if the skin jobs can't be there. So, yeah, I just took the whole thing of her shooting herself up in the neck with the anti-radiation meds as a bit strange.
Because she's trying to play human, though.
Yeah, but she could have pretended she'd taken the meds, especially if, as I said, they're wanting him to survive so they can see what it is he does and how he chooses and makes decisions.
Yeah, but even if she's pretending to take the meds, she would still have to use up that amount somehow.
Yeah, but if she'd given him, say, her the meds that she'd got, saying, right, these are my one, and these are your ones, I've got mine in my pocket.
Yeah, yeah, then he wouldn't know whether she's taking them or not. Yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. As I said, I just thought it was very sort of strange, and especially as part of the shot is literally just seeing her putting the anti-radiation shots in her, and it's just like, why? And it was never explained away or anything else like that, and I just thought, why do that?
But then maybe the part of the motivation for him, because, you know, they're basically leading him a merry dance. You know, they're making him feel like, you know, he's calling the shots and deciding where to go, but actually he's being led around from place to place. And so maybe part of their motivation is the potential running out of their ration of radiation meds, and that's the incentive to keep him going faster.
Possibly, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. That basically wraps up the episode, so we'll get to the trivia. Now, in this episode, Water ties into the original Battlestar, which was Bastille Day, where they both used workers, i.e. prisoners, to do the dirty work. And also, according to Battlestar Wiki, which I thought this was really funny, the initial episode was to focus on a paper shortage.
Yeah, I remember hearing about that, and it's just like, really? Why would a paper shortage be a crisis?
Yeah, I'm really glad they didn't go with the paper shortage.
Unless that was the whole reason behind explaining why they cut the corners off the paper.
Yeah, they were mulching the corners back to make new parchment.
So they just cut loads of corners off papers, pulp them, and make a piece of paper out of all the corners.
Yeah.
Love it.
I loved how thorough they were with that gimmick as well. Like, when you see photo frames on the shelves and the photo frames don't have the corners either, or the, you know, ring binders and they are the same shape, they don't have the corners, I'm thinking, well, wow.
Have you noticed the hard covers of a book is normal?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe it was just too difficult for them to mock up hard copies.
Well, that was actually one of the things they said, is they added this as just something to be different, but going through the series, they found it such a hindrance to actually sort of have all these corners cut off, all these bits of paper all the way through the series, that they really suddenly thought, Yeah, we shouldn't have done this.
Yeah. Some poor runner on the set probably had to sit there with a pair of scissors, day in, day out, just cutting corners. And he would have to do them with a ruler. So they were all exactly the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, there's just someone sitting there going, you've got that bit of paper. Whatever you do, don't bloody rip it. I want to reuse it. I don't want to cut another edge off that paper again.
But they even did it with the playing cards. The playing cards had all the corners cut off.
Yeah.
Well, the playing cards were sort of like pentagons or something, weren't they?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like 50p pieces.
Yeah.
which will make no sense to anyone outside the UK.
Oh, yeah. That didn't even occur to me.
Google it, people. That's what Google's for. Google English 50p or Scottish 50p, depending on where you are. It's basically the same shape. But yeah, I'm really glad they didn't do the paper one. And also, according to Gary Hutzel, the water tank was a virtual set consisting of one wall and a ramp. That's some seriously clever camera work.
Yeah,
because they did all the sort of lighting from the Raptor and everything else through it as well, didn't they?
Yeah. So one wall and a ramp, and they made it look like a massive water tank. That was really cleverly filmed.
Yeah. And it did look vast.
Indeed, it looked huge. I did like the EV suits, though.
Yeah, they looked sort of very similar to sort of what we have. But a lot more sort of lightweight and manoeuvrable.
I love the way you said, like what we have, as if you've got one hanging in your wardrobe.
Yeah, she wears it on Sundays.
Well, I have really bad allergies, so that just allows me to go outside.
He puts it on every day on a Sunday and goes to his son, how's your EV training? And his son quotes Worf and says, it made me sick to my stomach. Do you not know Steve's reading Star Trek to his 6-year-old, Roz?
Oh, that's some good parenting right there.
There you go.
Well done.
Yeah, I just finished reading Stellar Cartography to him. He did some of the reading of it. It's funny, sort of. He gets all the sort of big words, all the sci-fi ones. But yeah, and he'll get stuck on like really simple ones, like sort of amongst. He'll just like completely baffle him. But yeah, he'll sort of read out. That's the Klingon Empire, the Romulan Empire, Federation, Quadrants, and all these other words. And yeah, he'll get stuck on the really simple ones. Yes, he's a Trekkie.
Yeah, and if you want to know more about that, folks, if you listen to Commentary Trek Stars, then Steve's on there telling everyone all about it.
I am.
Yeah, so, but we won't go any more into Star Trek.
No.
Different podcasts. So that's basically water, folks. So any final thoughts?
I liked the way they'd got the animations for the water coming out.
Yes. Apparently they consulted NASA.
Yes. Because from what I think I read once about all that, water being exposed into space both freezes and boils.
Yeah.
And so they went through all that consultation in order to get that animation sort of looking right. And that did look impressive. I remember watching it thinking, that looks good.
Yeah. They a lot of attention to detail for basically a scene that's like 20 seconds long.
Yeah.
So. Any final thoughts, Roz?
Yeah, I like this this episode for the... It started off a lot of the relationships that will build over the coming seasons. It started off the rivalry and the sort of tension between Baltar and Starbuck, because this is the first time that they play cards together and he whoops her all over the place.
That's
It starts off the sort of deeper relationship between Rosalyn and Adama. It starts off the trust and that bond between Leah Adama and Rosalyn, and it kicks off the whole beginning of the storyline with Hilo and the other Sharon, and it continues on the Boomer and the Chief relationship. So even though really not a lot happens in this episode, you could sort of sum up the plot of this episode in a sentence. But actually, there's a lot of character development that goes on, and it's really the first stepping stone on the road to all the future plot lines that are going to develop. So I like that about this episode.
Excellent. Right, Steve, where can people find you on Twinternet?
They can find me on Twitter at MidnightShadow7, and that's Knight spelt N-I-T-E and the number 7.
There you go, Roz.
You can get me on Twitter at RoslynS, that's R-O-S-L-Y-N-S, or you can reach me by email at Roz, R-O-Z, at visionarytrek.com.
Okay, which is Rozzy's other podcast, folks.
Yes.
Come and listen. You can also find Steve on the GNT show.
Yeah, I'm part of the GNT book club, Book of the Celestial Temple, and I'm also part of Holosuite Media's Tribbles and Ecstasy podcast.
Yeah. Because he doesn't sleep.
Well, it only starts at 1 a.m.
Yeah, that's all. Yeah, that's all.
Well,
yeah.
The book club starts
that's
later.
The one reason why I'm not doing it is because it starts at 1 a.m.
Well, the book club starts later. That starts at 2.
God.
Jeepers.
That's all right. I get to bed by 4 because I'm up at 6.
Anyway, I'm also on Twitter, folks, and Google+. At COLMH01, so you can get me an either of them. And as I said at the start, you can feedback to us at commentaryfrackstars FRACK at gmail.com. And also there's commentaryfrackstars on Twitter. Holosuite Media is on Twitter, so you can follow both of them as well. And we'd love to hear your thoughts, comments, suggestions for future episodes, because although we're predominantly doing the episode reviews in regards to me and Steve, and hopefully Roslyn, if she likes what happened today. The other guys, Mike, Max, Drew, and so on, are covering other aspects of the show. So if there's an aspect of the show you want explored, just drop us a line, drop us a tweet, and we'll pass it on to the other guys, and they can tackle that little nugget for you. So thanks for coming around, Roz.
No, thanks for having me. It's been good fun.
You going to come back?
I could be persuaded.
Excellent.
There you go. Now, you heard that, folks. If she's not back, nothing to do with Mainstay. So, thanks for listening, folks. Thanks for downloading, and we'll speak to you soon.
Take care. Bye.